All right, well, let me introduce you to who else is in the room here with me. So I have Tony Latto. Tony is the industrial design director at Dell for the Latitude notebook product line. And also is Aaron Hernandez, who's a designer here at Axis Design. So there's the three of us. Tony and Aaron, this is Ben. Ben, we worked with him and his team a few years back on a few different projects, most notably their electronic torque wrench. But it's been a little while since we've had a chance to talk, Ben, so it's good to hear you. So I know we've got a lot of stuff to go through, and we, as you mentioned in your email, we're probably not going to be able to get through all of the questions in the time that we have. We know you're a busy guy. So why don't we start with having you just saying a little bit about yourself and your education and what led you to where you're at Snap-on.
All right. So as a quick background, I grew up in Nebraska, and just one thing my dad always said to me was never get an indoor job. I think the reality was we didn't know anybody that didn't work in either farming or ranching or construction. Studied biology, went on and got a master's degree. It started out in eukaryotic mammalian cytogenetics and then moved into microbial genetics and then ended up going to the University of Massachusetts. So first 2 degrees from the University of Nebraska, bachelor's and master's in science, and then had the opportunity to go to the University of Massachusetts under a fellowship from the National Academy of Sciences to study biotechnology. And at that time, it was, I forget what it was, but it was a decent enough stipend tax-free that it seemed better than going to work. Got my PhD and looked at, some jobs in the pharmaceutical world and looked at some jobs in the food industry and happened to get an offer from Kraft Foods here in Chicago to work in biotechnology and, took the offer and moved to Chicago. And it was quite interesting. I remember that, probably the first day I walked in the door, I saw all the new products there and immediately thought, I want to work in new product development. I want to come up with new stuff. The first job I had was actually as a research scientist working in biotechnology on things like fat mimetics and flavor systems and antioxidants and a bunch of, kind of basic science stuff. Before long, I moved into working in product development on the R&D side, coming up with new products, and worked up the tech ladder to a research principal within a fairly short amount of time. Realized I really liked working with people and managing people, so I moved from the technical ladder over to the management side, did that for several years, and then had the opportunity to move into marketing, and ended up making the move into marketing probably in the late 90s, something like that.
Wow, that's a lot of, you covered a lot of territory in terms of parts of the product development process and areas of expertise. All right. Wow. Okay. So now how long have you been at Snap-on?
So, just going back to, I moved to marketing at Kraft and did that, I guess, for 4 or 5 years and then had the opportunity to go to PepsiCo where I led innovation on a number of different brands, shelf-stable beverages, then Tropicana, and then Quaker. And then in 2007, had the opportunity to come here to Snap-on as a chief innovation officer. So I guess I have been here a little over 12 years. Time goes by fast, but Snap-on was looking to kind of build some corporate expertise around innovation and what the CEO at the time called customer connection, really making sure that all the new products we worked on, all the innovation we did was, really listening to the customer and keeping the customer kind of front and center of everything that we did.
Okay. In terms of moving from, so Kraft and PepsiCo are, I would say, primarily in the food industry, how did you find that transition to Snap-on being, in terms of what's being developed, a totally different type of product? How did you find that transition?
Yeah, clearly I had a large uphill hurdle to kind of understand the products. You know, I had a background working with my hands and working with tools, so I knew what most of the stuff was. A lot of the projects I work on now are software and electronics, which, of course, you don't work on at all when you're in the food industry. You know, really listening and observing customers, it's kind of the same no matter what industry you're in. It's about kind of being able to tease out those insights and be able to turn those into new product ideas. You know, again, whether it's a wrench or whether it's a new soft drink or whether it's a new version of macaroni and cheese, the products are different, but sort of the process of doing innovation, the process of sort of listening to customers and that, you know, really user-driven design, kind of the same across all industries.
Yeah. Well, that was certainly something I appreciated working with you guys on when we had done the few things we have together. It was very clear that Snap-on, and especially you, Ben, were very good at running those sessions with customers and getting their feedback. So maybe you could tell us then a little bit more about your role at Snap-on. What areas fall under your responsibility? How the structure is, I guess maybe a little bit would be interesting as well.
Yeah, so without going into too much detail about the company, but with a little bit of background for folks who may not be familiar with the brand or really only know the brand from hand tools, we sort of split our customer base into three clusters. And the first are really technicians, largely technicians who own their own tools, who fix things in the transportation industry. And that can be everything from, you know, motorcycles and snowmobiles and lawnmowers, automobiles, up through heavy-duty trucks and construction equipment and agriculture equipment and, of course, aviation. Those are all sort of the core customers that we serve primarily through the van channel. And the van channel are franchisees. They don't work for us, but they have a designated list of calls. And we sell a wide variety of products. Primarily things, though, you would think of as sort of traditional tools to them. Hand tools, power tools, tool storage, small shop equipment, etc. So anything you really need to get your job done. And one thing I mention is, as I talk about Snap-on, we really focus on only selling to the professional. So people who make their living using the tools. So the products we sell are designed for professionals. They're not designed for the do-it-yourself crowd or the home user. They're really designed for people who make a living using the tools. So that's kind of the first cluster, which is focused on the transportation segment. The other cluster, which is also in the transportation segment, but is a slightly different end user, are shop owners and managers, as well as, you know, the OEs that build cars and build combines and heavy-duty trucks and everything else. And to them, we sell a variety of things, including undercar equipment, including all of the more expensive shop equipment you might need to run a garage, and including things like lifts and tire balancers and tire changers and alignment machines. We also sell diagnostic tools and a wide variety of software. So we sell software related to how do you do a repair, how long should that repair take, in other words, estimating software. We sell software for the original equipment manufacturers that are things like electronic parts catalogs and inventory management tools. So almost if you think of anything you would need to run a business, whether it's a car dealership or a small mom-and-pop repair garage, we'll sell you what you need to run that business, from the software side to the hardware side. So that's kind of the second big cluster. And then the last one are really what we call critical industries, but these are primarily in the industrial space. In some countries, these might include the trades, but by and large, they include things like manufacturing, power generation, rail, aerospace, oil and gas extraction, and a number of other things. So anything that we think might be a critical industry that requires tools, tools are essential to that criticality and whatever they make essential. And that kind of spans the globe. So that's kind of our, you know, long-winded, but that's kind of our customer base. So what do we do? You know, I work in corporate, and this job was really designed to do a couple of things for Snap-on. One was this idea of creating a culture of fearless innovation, and the other was sort of creating a company that was driven by customers and what we call customer connection. The customers are at the center of everything that we do, in particular innovation and new product ideas. So as I think about and I kind of describe the work we do, it's kind of split into three different buckets. So the first bucket, it's sort of the corporate stuff. I run an innovation center. We built an innovation center called Innovation Works here in Kenosha, which is where our company headquarters is. We have both customers as well as associates come in here and use the space. We have design staff on, you know, industrial designers on staff, excuse me, here within the space, building prototypes, working with our internal customers. So that's kind of one bucket of activity related to that. We sort of do some tracking around innovation. We do training around how to do innovation as well as how to connect with your customers. And we give out internal awards. So we'll give out innovation awards, which I really find helps kind of drive that culture of fearless innovation. You recognize their efforts, recognize them for taking a risk. The other bucket of activity we do, and this crosses all of our business groups across the globe, we'll look and do deep dives into either industry segments or customer segments or something we kind of think is important for the future of the company. And we'll pull in various associates from various product groups into that kind of effort. So we might do a deep dive into, say, aviation technicians, or we might look at next generation vehicles or self-driving vehicles, or we might look at the wind industry. It could be almost anything. And with that, we'll pull in people from a variety of product groups, do a deep dive into it, and try to identify what are the key insights and what are the opportunities, what are the new product ideas we should be going after. So that's kind of our, you know, the next big bucket of activity. And the last thing we do are specific requests from the product groups. And these can range from, you know, the ones that are here in Kenosha to ones over in Asia to guys in Spain or ladies in Sweden. They may ask us to do something very, very close in, like, hey, help us understand this particular customer. Help us understand what a customer thinks about this new product idea. Or do a very specific design project, sort of the one you mentioned earlier, Dan, about, you know, a new electronic torque wrench. Big request from the folks at CDI out in LA who build torque wrenches. They wanted to do the next generation electronic torque wrench and ask for our help in designing it. And those, so they can be very small to help us fill our five-year pipeline with new products. So oftentimes this product group will come and say, hey, I know what we're going to do next year and kind of the year after, but help us understand what we can be doing 3 to 5 years from now so we have a full pipeline full of products, and we'll do a lot of work on that as well.
So with all of these clusters that you talked about in different areas that you guys focus on, is that how all of these various sub-brands that you guys have, is that how you fulfill these clusters with your sub-brands?
Yeah, so we use, I mean, the Snap-on brand is the primary brand. We have a number of other brands that we use. You know, from an innovation perspective, yeah, we try to provide service to all of our internal customers. Doesn't matter which brand they're on or which customers they serve or which products are under their, you know, under the umbrella.
Great. So how have you guys, as you've been there for 12 years, how has the company adopted the sort of innovation process that you guys have been undergoing? Is this something new or was it already active when you got there?
Yeah, so I would say, you know, a couple of things. First of all, you know, Snap-on, we're going to be 100 years old next year. The company was built on innovation. Joe Johnson, the founder, had this idea of the interchangeable socket, and his basic business idea was 5 does the work of 50. He sort of recognized that Ford was starting to mass produce automobiles, that there was going to be a huge need for technicians to be able to fix those cars, and they were going to need tools. So his first invention was the interchangeable socket. He, not too long after that, invented the ratchet as well. So the company's kind of built on innovation. Innovation's sort of been the lifeblood. And I wouldn't say that we got off course. However, you know, we definitely needed to become more innovative and a little bit more risk-taking and broaden the way that we thought about new products, in particular the way we thought about new product categories, and were able to basically develop products in a broad variety of categories to cover our customers' needs. So that's kind of the main thing, I think, in terms of how have we shifted. If you went back to the history of the company, primarily we were serving individual automotive technicians. Many of the people that worked here in innovation came with that sort of background. You know, they, even though they might have been mechanical engineers or metallurgists, they oftentimes had a background fixing automobiles. So they brought a strong sense of knowledge over the years from their background. As time went on, a couple of things happened. You know, one is got a much broader customer base than just the individual automotive technician fixing cars. And also, the associates that we hired oftentimes didn't have a background fixing automobiles. So one of the key things we've really driven home in the last 12 years is this idea of getting out and connecting with customers and understanding what they do. Even if you have a background in the field, I always say, hey, once you've been out of the industry and turning a wrench for 6 months, you really don't understand the industry anymore because things change so rapidly. So what we've really instilled is this idea of no matter who the customer is, get out, talk to them, but also watch them work. And then it becomes a bit more of a partnership in terms of how you do innovation. As you know, most of the time, end users aren't able to easily articulate the innovation needs that they have or the pain points that they have. Oftentimes, you can get there by observing. They can tell you a few things, but most of where we get our great ideas is by watching our customers work and thinking, ah, I know a way we could help them do that faster. And we oftentimes call these productivity solutions. How can we help our end users do their work more efficiently, safer, and more quickly?
So in your 12 years at Snap-on, what are the biggest changes that you've been able to see or experience within the company?
Yeah, so a couple of things. I do think we have, you know, we've definitely driven home this idea of customer first and center. I think we've also driven home in a fair amount of product groups, and I tell people it's a journey. The idea of saying, hey, now we've got this idea of fearless innovation. Maybe we're 80% of the way there. Maybe we were 20% of the way there 10 years ago. I don't know. That would be a kind of a wild-ass guess. But, you know, basically you're never going to get all the way to perfect. All you can, you know, hope that we get better and better each day. So I think we have instilled this idea of a culture of fearless innovation and an idea of being much more connected with our customer. That's definitely been a bit of a sea change and a very good change, very positive move. I think the other thing is, though, as you look at our product mix, if you went back, even when I started, yeah, we were doing things like power tools, but primarily we were kind of doing old NiCad cordless tools and mostly focused on pneumatic. Now you're looking at small, compact lithium-ion cordless tools. The other big change has been, you know, just the inclusion and expansion of our software business. You know, we continue to look and see more and more opportunities to develop software and to make that software even better for the customers that we serve. And then lastly, I think we've continued to kind of broaden the customer base, both globally in terms of our geographic footprint, but also the types of customers that we serve. And even if we had some business with those customers in the past, I think we've continued to create broader product offerings and better product offerings to serve their needs.
Okay. So have you run up against any hesitancy, you know, as you're describing this change to a more customer-focused, fearless innovation mindset, was there any hesitancy within the company that you had to try to work around, or was it something that was embraced fully from the get-go?
Of course it was embraced fully. No. there was a number of things. I'll talk about them without, you know, you don't want to sort of point any fingers at folks. We had individuals within the organization who thought they knew way more than the customer. And they struggled with grasping what the customer, what talking to an end user, what an end user would actually do for them. And the way we really got around that was by, you know, the proof was in the work, showing the actual products that came up. The other thing is, you know, when I came on board, I realized you're not going to be able to kind of do this with a big hammer. I had to go out and selectively find people who were looking for this kind of help, were looking to do this kind of work, and were open to it, right? and then them and showing success. And as those individuals both had success in innovation, but have also worked their way up through the organization, it definitely trickled down considerably. I mean, so that was sort of this idea of, you know, customer connection. Then there was the idea of innovation and taking risk. We had a lot of people who'd been in the organization a long time and were very hesitant to take risk. You know, you might say there were times that had been beaten out of them in the past history. So for them to overcome that hurdle and to get back into it. But one of the bigger things that we did, and I'll talk about how we kind of solved all of them in a minute, we had huge silos between the product groups. So product group A, so if you worked in power tools, you'd never talk to the guy in hand tools, and if you worked in hand tools, you'd never talk to the person in tool storage, and sure as heck, none of those guys would ever talk to the guys writing code out in, you know, Poway, California for, you know, repair information. So one of the things that we found was by doing, and I mentioned earlier, these big projects that dove deep into a certain customer segment, we would pull people in from across different product groups. And that got them talking to each other. It got them thinking about ways to collaborate. So collaboration was a big, big win in terms of driving more innovation. And from the top down, you know, our current CEO has this idea that all the people who are under some sort of management incentive plan, so anyone who manages other people, has to have some goals around innovation, customer connection, and collaboration. And that's really helped the product groups kind of work together. And it does make you much more innovative. It also allows you to share information about your customers and allows you to share much more technical information about your products. If you think about it, if I'm designing a new toolbox, and I could tell a long story about the epic toolbox we designed, but when we were designing that, nobody in tool storage talked to the people whose product actually went into the toolbox. And as we started to get weird customer feedback, like, hey, I didn't like this, didn't like that, I realized we needed to pull in people from all the different product groups who made products that actually went into a tool storage solution and have us all work together to be able to create the optimal tool storage solution. It continues to be a journey. I think, you know, most people are along, you know, have come a long way and continue to get better. There's some groups, you know, we continue to have to, you know, work with to try to get them to move the needle.
So it really sounds like you guys are transitioning into a tech company more so than just a hardware company, that you really are trying to take a completely different approach than probably what you guys were doing 20 years ago.
Yeah, I think that's true. Clearly, you know, Chrome hand tools and, you know, the bling of fancy tool storage will always be at the core of what we do. But I think, you know, there are a couple of things that have happened. One is the shift in the products that our customers actually work on. So when you think about the modern vehicle of today, you need bidirectional communication, so you have to have a scan tool to talk to a car, as an example, to plug into the OBD2 port. You got to be able to send information and pull information off of that. You also need much, much greater access to repair information, figure out how to fix things. Vehicles are much, much more complicated than they might have been 30 years ago, 40 years ago, 50 years ago, for sure. So I think part of that transition is driven by the end products that our customers work on, whether they're wind towers or, you know, the Dreamliner or, an almost self-driving automobile. Let's just say a vehicle that has a lot of advanced driver assist systems. So all of those have increased the complexity of how you do the repair and also the amount of information that you need. That's kind of one side of it. I think the other side was looking more holistically at our customers, thinking, oh, if you're a small business owner who has a shop, part of what you need are technicians to work for you and shop equipment, but you also need a variety of software and electronic solutions to help run that business. And so I think that was the other recognition was, you know, how do we get deeper with our customers? They know our brand. How do we sort of provide everything that they need?
All right. So in terms of trends in the industry, I would assume that
again, to Tony's question, everything seems to be pushing to more and more complex software-driven type products. Would you agree with that, or are there other sort of big trends as well that you would lump together with that sort of thing?
Yeah, so I think, you know, let's, and I'll split a couple of different industries and combine some together. I think, first of all, you know, on the automotive side, clearly you're seeing more and more electronic information embedded within the vehicle. The other big trends, of course, are, you know, alternative drivetrains as you look to the future, whether it's hybrid or full electric or something else we haven't thought of yet. But clearly those trends are going on in certain countries and will continue to go on here. I mean, one of the biggest trends is probably around this idea of what the industry will often call ADAS, or Advanced Driver Assist Systems. So this is not quite all the way to a, you know, fully autonomous driving vehicle, but it's the stuff that most of us probably have in our cars now. Blind spot detectors, dynamic cruise control, rear backup cameras, lane departure warnings. You know, this is a huge, huge sea change in the way that vehicles need to be fixed, because you need to make sure these systems are calibrated and repaired properly, because life's really, you know, lives really do depend on it.
Right? Sure, yeah.
But there are two of the big, you know, Kenny, you mentioned software. I think probably the three big trends in the automotive world. The other thing we're seeing, though, in automotive as well as in aviation and a number of other industries, are the, you know, the sort of advent and growth of new materials. I mentioned the Dreamliner. So you're seeing more composites being used, clearly more aluminum being used. Related to that, one of the things we're seeing is much more interest in adhering to specific torque values. So in the past, maybe you were more worried about, okay, did you put enough torque onto a lug nut to make sure the tire doesn't fall off? Now there's a lot of concern about doing either delicate engine work or work on an airplane or work in manufacturing where you don't want to over-torque. So under-torquing used to be kind of the main concern. Now over-torquing is about as much of a concern as under-torquing. So we're seeing a lot of interest in a broad range of torque from, you know, up to inch pounds up to, you know, the tens of thousands of newton meters, tens of thousands of foot pounds, you know, and really large torque multiplier. So we're going after, and I think we've got a great selection of products that kind of cover the entire world of torque. And related to that, and, you know, you may hear terms like smart tools or error proofing, but the idea that, and we see this across all the industries, and particularly related to torque, but, you know, there are other applications as well, making sure that a fastener is applied correctly. So oftentimes you see this in manufacturing, but, you know, did all these fasteners get put in? Were they all put into the right torque? And we have a number of products that have been developed around this idea of error proofing and making sure that, you know, during a manufacturing or a repair process, people are sticking, you know, to the procedure and doing it correctly. And then the last sort of bucket, and this may be more related to us, but we've done a lot of work across a number of industries around tool control. And this primarily came out of the military and aviation, where there were significant issues if you lost a tool, left a tool in a jet engine, as an example. So the idea, the cost of losing a tool was high. But then we started to see more interest in places where it might be difficult to replace a tool, or in things like the food industry, where you don't want a tool to fall into, you know, a food blender. So we've done a lot of work around what we call automated tool control, but being able to know, you know, where your tools are at all times, make sure they're not lost, also organizing them in a way that helps with the efficiency of the individual using those tools. And I could probably go on with other trends, but I think, you know, those are some of the key ones. I think, you know, in some industries, you're continuing to see more automation, and as you see more automation, the repair to some of those machines and robots are quite intricate and require a large variety of specialty tools and
Okay. Ben, I noticed in your website that you guys have a submit a product idea feature. I was wondering how that has worked in terms of coming up with new
innovative products or new innovative solutions?
Yeah, great question. So, yeah, we run a open innovation program. As I mentioned, the vast majority of our ideas really come from our internal associates, product managers, product developers, engineers, going out, talking to customers, watching them work, and coming up with ideas. The next bucket of ideas that we get are the program that you mentioned. You fill out a form, you can submit an idea, and right now I think we give away $3,000 plus the first dozen of the products if it's commercialized. So a lot of people love to get those products in their hands. They don't need to have any IP to do that. All they have to do is submit an idea to us that we think is unique and is commercializable. So, you know, I won't give you the exact numbers on those, but we receive a significant amount of new product ideas each year, and we commercialize a significant amount of those. I'll tell you that the reality is many of them are highly specialized tools. Oftentimes, a technician will notice an issue with access, an issue in doing a repair, and will come up with a suggestion. The suggestion could be as simple as, hey, create a tool to do this. Or it could be as complicated as somebody sending in an actual prototype. We've had prototypes, you know, carved out of wood. We've had prototypes welded out of metal. We receive all kinds of stuff. So it's in the thousands of ideas that we receive each year, and it's in the, you know, multiple dozens in terms of how many that we actually commercialize. So we receive a lot of ideas, and we commercialize a fair amount of those. You know, the hit rate's not perfect, but
sure.
It's a great way to show our customers we're listening. It also has provided us with a number of pieces of unique innovation. So that's kind of level one. The other thing we will do, we do have inventors who contact us with very specific ideas where they may have IP. So they may have a patent, or they may have a patent in progress, or they've done a design patent. They've got something sort of in the works around intellectual property. And in those cases, if we're interested in the idea, we'll make some sort of an agreement, typically a licensing agreement, where we will pay a royalty for the use of that idea. And then the last thing we have, and these are particularly products that aren't in our, let's say, so much in our wheelhouse or field of expertise, oftentimes things like small electronics. But these can be completely new to the world products, things we've never really thought of. And we'll have an individual inventor who wants to make the product themselves and wants to sell it to us. And what we'll do is we'll work with them to make sure that the product meets our design standards, it's manufactured in a way that we agree with, and, you know, we'll basically then buy the product from them. Those, you know, tend to be, as you're going down sort of the funnel, those tend to be a little bit rare. Maybe you come across one of those every 3 years or so. But we do have ideas like that that come in as well. So we're very receptive to those. Again, though, you know, probably the biggest disconnect we have with individuals who will, you know, individual inventors who come to us with ideas. In fact, we don't produce things for the do-it-yourself market. We're not in the big box stores. So if you've got an idea like that, for the home user, it's not really within our, you know, scope of things that we're interested in.
Oh, that's really interesting. That's very unique. That's not a normal process. I know, you know, working at Dell, I don't think we take anything from anybody on the outside concerning product ideas and that sort of thing. That's highly unusual. I even recall having a conversation one time with a guy in the furniture industry, and I was describing something to him, and he's like, I don't want to hear it. I don't want to know about it. And I asked him why, and his response was, if they even come up with something very similar to that, he was worried about being sued. I don't know if you guys struggle with any of that.
Well, yeah, we make sure that anyone that submits an idea has provided contact information and that they've signed off on it. And if we're pursuing the idea, of course, we reach out to them, make sure everything is fine from a legal, you know, from a full disclosure standpoint.
That's really awesome. That really allows you to have the your customer really engaged with your brand. That's really, really cool.
Yeah, plus you probably, I would think it's a bit of a fun part of your role to go through some of those ideas and see what people are thinking and what they're submitting.
You've definitely had an interesting career path. So what would be your your a piece of advice you would give to maybe graduating students or people that have recently graduated?
That's a great question. It's, I actually have a talk. I wish I had it in front of me because I won't remember all of the factors. But I do have a presentation I give oftentimes to either our interns or sometimes people from the local community, recent college graduates who are looking to get into their first job. So I think, the first thing, though, and a question I get asked a lot, I started out in biotechnology, I moved into product development, kind of moved into management, moved into marketing, changed industries from the food and beverage industry over to the sort of the industrial space. And so, well, how do you do that? And the one thing I think I tell everyone, when you first start out at a job, you're going to be hired to do one thing. Get really, really good at it. Before you start volunteering to say, oh, I'm working in finance, but I want to work in marketing, or I work in product development, and I'd rather work in quality. First, get really, really good at the job you're hired to do. Blow everybody away with your ability. Then that opens the door to be able to do other things. I'm going to say the same thing for people who look like, well, what other training could I do? What other education? Like, once you're really good at the job you're doing, then you can go out and pursue additional training, pursue additional opportunities. But get good at your first job and kind of prove yourself there. I think the other thing, though, and these are partly things related to innovation, but I think true for the kind of workers that folks want to hire now. We are looking for people who are more open-minded, more innovative, more creative. The truth is a lot of the sort of rote job of finance and accounting and things like that, where you're just putting numbers into a spreadsheet, those are going to probably be automated, and they already have been in many cases. But if you can bring unique things to that, and of course in the world of finance, it doesn't mean, screwy accounting, but it does mean think of creative ways and innovative ways to do things, I think that really helps. Some of the other things that are very important are people who are good at listening. Listening skills, I think, first of all, it helps you get a job, but I think it's probably one of the number one things that is very, very important to be able to do. But, kind of related to that, I think the idea of when you hear information, being able to get the result of it, look at a lot of complicated information and be able to synthesize it and kind of say, hey, this is what we ought to go to. Take a little bit of risk. If you can, work for a company that's got great brands, you can never lose there. And of course, there's always this idea you can have a fairly high level of integrity.
Well, that's fantastic. I know we're kind of running up on time. We're about 15 minutes until noon, our time. I'm not sure if there's anything else you want to, you guys have any other questions?
Yeah, I just want to ask one more. So I was on the items here. So I guess before I ask the question, Ben, so I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us. I know you're a busy guy, so definitely a lot of big thanks for that. In your 12 years or so at Snap-on, what's been the biggest surprise, would you say?
The biggest surprise is that I've been here 12 years. And the honest truth is, I'll probably be bored after a couple of years. But the reality is, we have such a broad portfolio of products. I get to work on different stuff all the time. I'm amazed how much I actually love doing this. I've always loved, working with customers and coming up with new ideas. It's what drives me is doing innovation. So that part's not surprising. I think what surprised me is there's just been so much opportunity here. Come up with new ideas, and there's always new people joining the organization. The truth is, we're making acquisitions on a fairly regular basis, and I get to go in there, get those folks on board with, doing customer connection, doing innovation, and an opportunity to work on oftentimes entirely new products that I would have had no idea 2 years
before,
even be within our portfolio. So that's probably been my biggest surprise, is that there's always kind of something new to do.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's a good surprise. All right, well, very good, Ben. Like I said, thank you very much.